This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to yet another edition of the Kona Edge. Every now and again, I get to chat to an athlete that I don't even have to ask questions. I can sit and listen to them for days, and today's podcast is one of them. I love stories around the sport, and our guest today has got stories about Ironman and Kona coming out of his ears. He's been around the sport for a long, long time. He's been pretty much racing on the Big Island since the early 80s, and if you want to check out some incredible pictures of him racing on the Big Island in those early days, we'll chat about some of those things and the gear that they had in today's podcast. All you have to do is head over to thekonaedge.com and you can find all of that out there. Before we get into my chat with Rudolf von Berg, and I'm talking Rudolf von Berg Senior because he's got a son who is in his own right a fantastic triathlete, but I'm talking about Rudolf von Berg Senior, fantastic guy, incredible athlete, and just someone who loves the sport of triathlon to no end. But that's coming up in a mo. Don't forget, this month we are giving away an entry into a half Ironman event. Anyone you choose, it doesn't matter where you are in the world. All you have to do if you want to find out more about it is head over to thekonaedge.com/win. I've been talking about our patron platform that we've got access to here on the podcast, and we've got lots of people supporting us and helping us to keep the lights on. But I want to give something back to you, our patrons. So if you are willing to become a patron, and I'm not asking for much, literally, from as little as a dollar a month, you can pledge your support and help us out. For every dollar that you do pledge, I'll pop your name into the hat. And at the end of June and at the end of every month, we'll be giving away some cool stuff. We're chatting to a couple of big brands at the moment, and I've committed until the end of the year to give away a half Ironman entry every single month. So the first one's happening in June. Entries close for this month's one. You need to become a patron before the end of June, before midnight on the 30th of this month. All you need to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/win to find out more. It's time for today's Coach's Corner. If you're an athlete looking for a coach, it doesn't matter where you are in the world, we've got access to some of the best triathlon and Ironman coaches around. If you'd like to find out more or hook up with one of our coaches, whether you need help with a swim, bike, run, or nutrition, all you have to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. You can get all the details there. Check out all the coaches that we've got access to. And don't forget, too, if you are a coach and you would like to get access to the podcast and get a bit of a plug on the podcast, all you have to do is head over to that same URL, okay? It's thekonaedge.com/coaching. Scroll down to the bottom of the page and you can get all the details there. So that's thekonaedge.com/coaching. Well, for the first time, we head to France and the south of France, a beautiful part of the world and fairly close to the Ironman Nice route, as a matter of fact. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Rudolf von Berg onto the Kona Edge. Rudolf, welcome onto the Kona Edge. Thanks for joining me today.
Yes, thank you, Brad. Thank you for asking me to do this interview.
Rudolf, one thing I love about doing this podcast is I just get to chat to athletes from all over the world. And you're the first one we're speaking to who lives in France, has got a very diverse background. You were just telling me before we started recording that you've got ancestry from Hungary, from Belgium. You've spent time in the States. So you're pretty much a citizen of the world.
Exactly, yeah. That's how I really consider myself. I've moved so much during my life, four or five different countries, that I feel at ease everywhere. I adapt immediately to local customs wherever I go. And there are no boundaries really for me in my life now.
And having a sport like triathlon really does bridge things too. It doesn't matter where you're from in the world, we've got this one thing in common.
Exactly. In fact, I pick my races very often in relation to the country or the spot where they are that I want to discover that usually I don't know, and it's part of my race picking.
Absolutely. Let's talk about how you got into the sport, Rudolf. Were you always growing up? Were you always active? What's your sporting background?
Yeah, extremely active. Since I was 8, 9, 10 years old, I started to do all sorts of sports. So I started with the team sports, because in France, usually you only have team sports in school. So So I was part of soccer team, basketball team, handball team, and then I switched to track and field. Then in the later years of high school, 16 to 18 years old, the last 3 years, then I was in the varsity team of my school in soccer, basketball, tennis, alpine skiing, and track and field. And in track and field, I was doing 5 events. So I was pretty much, you could say, without being presumptuous or too arrogant, now that I'm 60 years old, I think I can tell the truth, right? I was pretty much a natural in sport. I was picking up a sport real fast, and I would be immediately in the varsity team of the school or the university. Because then when I went to college in Babson College in Massachusetts, just outside of Boston, I was in the varsity team of the soccer team, the tennis team, and the alpine skiing team. So you see, none of the triathlon sport yet at that moment.
But in saying that, having a diverse sporting background and then coming into a sport like triathlon, it really does help. Often we'll see an athlete come in from a swimming background or a running background, and they're really good at that one specific sport. But someone like you, who's got that all-round ability, you found the transition into triathlon pretty easy, I'm sure.
I think that's really the thing that helped me being reasonably good, reasonably fast. Because swimming, it's something that usually you would say, it's so technical that you have to start learning when you're a kid. In fact, all my children, I put them in the swim pool at 5 years old, 6 years old to learn the technique, because I started to swim only at 27 years old. Somehow, I don't know if it's because all my life I've been watching sports on television, just watching the people. And when I went in the pool, I was reasonably good, pretty fast. And biking, the idol of my youth was Eddy Merckx. So the famous Belgian mm-hmm. rider. Are you still there, Brad?
Yeah, I am listening.
And so I watched a lot of bike race, even though I basically didn't bike, except a small hint with the Belgian national ski alpine team, because we would do some hills with the bike as a training for skiing. But we would meet only twice a year, so I would bike maybe two or three times a year. So it was I really had not biked in my life until 27 years old, and running. I had done some running, but it was, the 1K on the track and field team in high school, which was nothing. We would train a month for that, and that's it. And then I as a fluke, as a joke, as a bet, I did twice the Boston Marathon while I was in Babson College. The first year with 3 weeks of practice, and I didn't finish. And obviously, and the second year with 2 months of practice, and then I finished. But I was a complete ignorant. I did that marathon without drinking a single cup of water, because I thought that eating and drinking while doing sport was detrimental to you. So my goal was to finish the Boston Marathon without taking any fluids whatsoever during the whole race. And the last 10K were a horrendous nightmare. But I refused to walk one single meter, and I finished the race in less than 4 hours. At 3:45, and I was on pace of 2:30 after half marathon. But I completely collapsed, and then I learned my lesson. And after that, I started to really learn, to really read a lot of things. And then suddenly one day, I heard about the word triathlon and the Ironman in Hawaii. It was in the Boston Globe. They were mentioning that a few weirdos were doing this race with 3 outrageous distance on an island. And I said, "What is this? This is impossible to do, except if you move to the island and you train for a whole year just to do it." And then he disappeared from my mind. And at the end of college, about 2 years later, while I was in New York, I was coming back home. I was a commodities trader, but I was still in a soccer team. I was running around Central Park. I was still very active. And then I saw a flyer of a Big Apple Triathlon Club. So the phone number, and I called a guy. The guy was named Dan Honig. I still remember his name. We talked for an hour on the phone, and he hooked me. And that was the 31st, October 31st, 1983. On November 1st, my quote-unquote career as a triathlete started. And it was in New York. I would swim or run in the morning, and then in the spring bike in the morning, and then swim or run in the evening. And the club was going to the Bahamas Triathlon. It was a triathlon called at the time the Diamond of the Stars. It was organized by a guy called, if I recall the name, Horner. He had brought multiple Hollywood stars. I remember Christine Brinkley, for example. That's a name that pops up. But there were other people from the triathlon world. I remember Scott Tinley, the first time I met him there. And I think there were some others of the Big Four. I think maybe Dave Scott was there. I'm not sure. And that triathlon of the Bahamas was basically a half Ironman with weird distance, a little bit more in every sport. And then a little bit less, but around the half Ironman distance. That was my first triathlon ever. And that hooked me for the rest. And after that, I did triathlon about every week. And at that moment, we are in 84. And in 84, you don't need to qualify for Hawaii. And as a foreigner, I mean, they almost invite you to come because they want foreigner. They don't want the Ironman to be only an American affair. So it was very easy to enter the race. So with a few friends from New York, we went to the Ironman in Hawaii in October 84.
Wow.
And during all these months in New York, I was training in a pool of at the beginning it was a pool that had about 40 meters. I don't know. I had to do 112, 120 laps to do one mile, and then I switched to another pool. And what's funny in that pool, that it was a pool of the New York AC, it was New York Athletic Club, and it's not a joke what I'm going to tell you. We were obliged to swim naked. You were not allowed. A man was not allowed to have a bathing suit. So all my training was doing swimming naked in that swimming pool in New York, and that's how I got ready into swimming.
That's an incredible story, Rolf. I love it. I absolutely love it. The sport has changed a lot since then. Obviously, you had a very early on experience on the Big Island in the early 80s. You've been many times since. It's a very different sport to what it is what it was back then.
But it's a very different sport from all points of view. When you see my pictures in the 80s with the bikes we had, the helmet we had, I mean, just the way we were, I mean, it's look like it's really the prehistoric times. It's almost like watching the Tour de France in the 1900 at the beginning when you compare the bikes then and the bikes now. I mean, it's but it also changed. The whole thing changed also in Kona. Kona was a very small village. There was very few stores. There was no traffic on the highway. You could go to the airport and not see one single car. In a certain way, I'm nostalgic. I have to tell you the truth. It's interesting because the other day was a few months ago in Kona. I was talking with Mark Allen, who has remained a very dear friend. And we were talking about all these years, and he was asking me, I would like to know from your point of view really what has changed. What can we do to make it better, to improve the race now? How can we do, not of course it will never feel again like in the 80s, but what can we do so everybody, because we hear so many bad stories about Kona and the Ironman now, so many negative stories, particularly around the fairness of the race, and particularly because the drafting is very poorly marshaled. And as a result, we were talking about that, and we realized that both he and me were very nostalgic about this. The 80s for me, and for him it was the early 90s, because he didn't really compete in the 80s. So the whole thing has changed. it was a family affair. You know, I remember Valérie Silk when I crossed the finish line. I don't remember if it was 85 or 86. She sang "Happy Birthday" because it was my birthday on that day as I was crossing the finish line. I mean, can you believe that? That would never happen now. You know, the race director singing when you're crossing the finish line in Hawaii. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. So it just gives you the idea of how it has changed. So
you talk about it being a family affair. Your family's grown up around that race. You've got a son who's a pretty good triathlete in his own right as well.
Well, I'm very subjective on that, of course. I feel he has a great potential, and he's more than pretty good. And if he maximizes the way he trains, and if he does everything well, I think he should do extremely well. He's really built. He's really made for the long distance more than for example the ITU distance. Mm. And I remember when he was still very young, he was. He was about 16, 17, and Craig Alexander had just won Hawaii when he was, and I don't think I'm making a mistake, he was 37 years old. And Rudy, when he saw that, he said, "Hey, Dad, Papi, I have 20 years to win Hawaii," you see? So he has that goal in his mind, and someday I hope we'll be together at the start of that race with the goal, you know, each one of us to win, of course, me in my category and himself, you know, to do the best he can in the pros. So that would be interesting.
That would be amazing. Rudolf, what's the secret to your longevity? You talk about racing still today. I mean, you were talking about racing and hard racing in the early 80s. How have you stayed fresh and stayed on top of your game and not got burnt out over that sort of length of time?
Well, I think the motivation comes from many, many, many different places. I think it comes originally, I mean, just from my inner inside, if I can say. I was, as you said at the beginning of the telecast, I was always very active when I was young, and I recall in my adolescence I was really ashamed of myself physically. You know, during the summer months, I was always embarrassed to not have a t-shirt. I was embarrassed to be topless because I felt I was too skinny. I had no muscles. So that has put me in sports since my really early youth, and I never left that sports environment. But for me, it was a way to develop myself, to be healthy. And then I noticed little by little that I was, as I told you at the beginning, I was pretty good in sports. I was immediately in varsity teams. So then I said, and I love this. I love these sports. I love the competition. I love to win. I love to be the best that I can be in something. You know, to study all parameters and to try to manage everything and to really, at the end of the day, maximize my potential in something. But I've done that also, you know, not only in sports. I've done that in everything I've been doing. I always try to do it the best, really the best that I could be at that thing. And in then. That has developed through my adolescence, then through the college year. I was always very active. But then when the family came, I started to find my motivation somewhere else. Then I say, okay, how can I be the best father possible for my children? I'm going to try to lead by example. I'm going to try to show them what a healthy life is. And I'm going to tell them about nutrition. I'm going to try to fight the pernicious, you know, influence of society. When my children were in school, there were a lot of drugs, a lot of cigarettes, a lot of sedentarity, no sports. So a lot of negative influence that are coming from all over the place. So I was trying with my wife to fight that at home. We also tried to not be invaded by the all the technological advances of society. Some are good, but some are really not good when they enter your home and they have your children in front of them for hours during the day. So, for example, to give an example, all these game things, you know, the Nintendo, the Game Box, one has never entered the first 20 years of my children's life in the home here. We really kept these things outside. We put them in sports immediately. We taught them about nutrition. We taught them about health. And at the end of the day, they were always telling me when they're coming back home, you know, Dad, in my school, in my class, you know, there are 30 guys and girls in my class. There are only three of us who don't smoke, and there are only two of us who do any sports. And they were kind of very proud of that, and it shows that the fight was hard, and it was very important for us as parents to do that. So that was an increased motivation, and for me to keep on racing and to keep some years to be the best in the world in my age group, and to show that to them, because all these trips, once they were grown enough, once they were basically 5 years old, we would bring them, all of them, to all the races we would go abroad. And they were all major races, you know, in Roth, in Hawaii, in Ironman, in Austria, all the places where we went, they were coming us. So that was the second main motivation that came in my life. It was, in a certain way, it was an educational tool. It was really geared towards my children. Now they're not there anymore. Now they are all grown up. They all live somewhere else. So now I have to find again my motivation somewhere else. And now, really, you know, when you're 60 and when you start to have some discomfort or some, you know, not health problem, but some weakness that start to appear, you know, after 50 years old, some joints, some things, whatever, then I started to realize, okay, now health becomes my main motivation. Health is paramount for me. And for me to have that health, to have that longevity, I cannot be sedentary. I have to keep on doing sports. And the healthy sports, I mean, among all the sports that exist in the world, the four healthiest sports, three of them are in triathlon: swim, bike, run. The fourth one is cross-country skiing. Why? Because those four sports are what I call straight sports. It means you're doing them basically in a straight line. You see, you don't have torsions like in all team sports. You don't have torsions of your joints, your ankle, your knees, like in squash, like in tennis. You know, those are sports that many people over 40, 50 keep on doing, but it's not good for them. So in a certain way, the best way to be healthy in your life is to do triathlon, because you have three of them. You know, you get three of them for the whole deal. So it's fantastic. So if you don't have any structural problems and you don't have major health issue, the best way to have long-term health is to do triathlon. And now while you're doing them, you obviously have to be very careful. You have to know yourself. And then, you know, all training program have really to be tailored with one single person. We are so much different that I don't believe in these people that receive these training plans and that are basically made for everybody. Each one of us has to start to know oneself very well, and then to adapt the training program to itself. And we know very well that at after 55, after 60, I mean, physiologically, in a triathlon, in an Ironman, we're really not built anymore to be able to race a marathon. At most, you can, I feel, you can survive the marathon, but you cannot really race it. So since, if anybody wants, like I do, to be competitive when I'll be 65, 70, 75, 80, 85, one day, I hope, to be the oldest person to have finished within 17 hours the Ironman in Hawaii. I remember when I was interviewed 20 years ago, I mentioned that out of the blue like that in the interview, and it was kept as a title. And unfortunately, in a certain way, my children, almost every 2 or 3 years, they remind me that, hey, Dad, remember, one day you'll be the oldest person to finish Hawaii, which means to also win Hawaii in your age group. On that, so you have to be there. Now you're 60. Be careful. You had a few broken bones. You had a very bad accident 5 years ago. You have to be careful in those roads with used cars, because we want to see you there at 80, 85, and maybe more. But the only way to get there is to manage everything I'm doing now in relation to sports with that in mind, and not thinking that the race, the European Championship in 2 weeks, or the World Championship in October or in September, it's the end of the of my life, or it's the end goal. No, that's not the end goal. So in order to be again competitive 20 years from now, I have to prepare that already now. I have to be smart already now. So that's why everything is really a return on investment. I calculate the time and the energy spent in an activity and the reward and the return I'm getting from it. If I have to spend lots of hours in the car, for example, I'm taking that as an example, the swim, in the car to go in a pool which is 30 minutes away, and then have to come back, and then we don't have master's programs here in France like we have in the States, so you have to swim alone basically in the pool. You have to come to gain what? To gain in a half Ironman, I'm going to gain what? I'm going to gain what, 30 seconds? Maybe 1 minute? I mean, this is ridiculous. Mm. So I've decided I'm not swimming from October to April, except, of course, if I'm injured. If I'm injured, I have a bad injury. I had a bad injury this winter, my first hamstring tear in 40 years. So I swam a bit more. But let's suppose I don't have that. I would not swim for October, April, because it's just not worth it. You know, the gain I'm getting out of the energy and time spent on it is not worth it. Now I'm switching to running. If you want to still be able to run at 80, 85, there is no way you'll get there if I run, and I'm not going to give you very high mileage, if I run 50 or 60 kilometers a week, you know, when I'm 60, I will not make it. So I have an average, even in an Ironman year, between 25 and 29 kilometers a week. That's my average. I can show you my training log. And that's the way I'm going to do it, providing I'm lucky, I'm not facing cars during you know, my bike training, which is perhaps the biggest danger we face as triathletes. As you can see in the news, there are so many that get hurt and killed that it's terrible. And but providing the good star is still there. If I minimize the pounding and the running, and I train smart in the running and in everything else, and of course we're talking also about nutrition, where I consider we eat now extremely well for the last 20 years. We really eat extremely healthy, and I think it's also one of the major part of quote unquote my present success, and. Then you can see a roadmap towards towards the next 20, 25 years of my life.
Of racing Ironman. That's incredible. Rudolf, you've been on the Big Island for the best part of 4 decades, essentially. Is there one race that really sticks out in your mind as a favorite within all that time, or is that too difficult to answer?
My favorite race is not Hawaii. It's not the Ironman, I'm telling you right now. In a certain way, perhaps you would have asked me the question at the end of the 80s or early 90s. I might have said Kona, because of the reason I mentioned before. Mm. It was a much smaller race. The drafting was was very well marshaled. So basically, it was a fair race. It was the most competitive race in the world. It was a fair race. Now it's not a fair race anymore. Last year, even though I won it, I really did not enjoy it. I have to tell you the truth. I hate it, in fact, because the race was so unfair on the bike. There was so much cheating. I was frankly completely disgusted, and I really didn't like it. And I posted a huge post on Facebook. Had a lot of feedback. I hope some people are going to do something in Hawaii. I hope they're going to change. For example, the swim starts, which is one of the reasons why the bike is so clogged. There's also too many people, so you have to start to have an age group wave start. Even though some people I know like the mass swim start, but it's not reasonable anymore. You have to decide. It's a world championship. It has to be the fairest race in the world. It cannot be the worst. How do you say that in English? The least fair race in the world. It's the world championship. Come on, it has to be the best race in the world from all point of view, and it's definitely not. So now to come back really to your question, I think I really love the Ironman in Roth in Germany. The atmosphere was fantastic, and not only at the finish line. The atmosphere is fantastic. The crowds are amazing in all the hills. And when I was doing it in the 90s, we were doing, if I recall, we were going two loops of 90 kilometers. And there was two major hills and a third one. But on these three hills, it was huge crowds. In one of them, there was exactly 1 yard to go through on the bike. There was so much. A little bit like when you see the stage in the Tour de France, you see L'Alpe d'Huez, they're going up. You know, everybody's touching the race. You remember last year, I think it was, where did Chris Froome fell? In the Mont Ventoux when he was running?
Yep.
You remember?
Yep, Mont Ventoux, exactly, yeah.
Exactly, but it was exactly like that in the road. Wow. Really had 1 yard to put your body and the bike, and there was no way that two bikes could go side by side. But for an athlete, the atmosphere and the support of the people and the enthusiasm of the German crowd were exhilarating. Really, you would not feel any tiredness once you were there. So I think I really can say that Ironman Roth was not an Ironman race now anymore. I think it's owned by Challenge. It was my favorite race, really.
Fantastic. Well, Rudolf, I'm looking forward to chatting a little bit about the individual disciplines and some of the things that you've, or lessons that you've learned and things that you've implementing in your training right now. And we'll save that for another podcast. Thanks for your time today.
Okay.
And that's it for today's edition of the Kone Edge. What a cool guy, hey? Oh, man, I can literally sit and listen to him for days and days and days. We'll catch up with him next week, Thursday, to find out a little bit more about his swim. I want to find out if swimming naked is the thing that really has given him the edge when it comes to his swimming over the decades that he's been involved in the sport. Before I do go, though, don't forget to head over to thekoneedge.com/win, become a patron, and make sure that you're in the draw to win that half Ironman race entry that we're giving away at the end of this month. The URL to get to once again is thekoneedge.com/win.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for The Kona Edge.